Okay, I'll just start with a quick injury update as usual. So Reece Stanley's the one from last week with that adductor issue that we're really confident is just a week. I'm aware that we said that with the previous one, and although it was a week and it looks like it was a recurrence, it's not, we're told, and they're very confident down that in our medical department. It's a slightly different issue, but very minor again. So we think he'll be available. Sam Menegola off that knee surgery, we're optimistic, will be available post-bye. So he's going well. Quinton Narkle, we're told it's a minor hamstring issue, but that one is a recurrence, so they'll be a little bit more cautious there. And it's not dissimilar to the Scott Selwood situation in that he had a hamstring and then a recurrence, so his progression back to AFL footy is going to be a lot slower than it would have been otherwise. So even though he's back playing and performing pretty well, he's a little bit off being in the frame for AFL selection because we just want to be really sure that his body's going to stand up, in particular his hamstring issues. Lockie Henderson's getting closer. It's a matter of weeks, that one. And then a few that are still a little bit further away. Jordan Cunico with a broken leg, still not likely until at least 5 or 6 weeks post-bye. And then Stefan Ockenbach making progress with a groin issue. But Stefan's very much a long-term player for us, so while we could push him back and play him now, there are just other priorities in his preparation beyond getting up for VFL games. I don't think I've missed anyone. Nakaya, did I bring up Cockatoo? No. So Cockatoo's going well, but he's still not playing. So status quo there. Been saying it for 12 months probably, I know, but post-bye he'll start ramping up a little bit, and looking forward to seeing some footy from him in that sort of round 16-17 period.
With Reece's adductor, is it something that just pops up on the
No, sorry to cut you off. They're two acute issues. So I'll be quite specific with this one. This is rare for me. It was a small muscle in the adductor initially, and this is more an adductor longus, the main muscle in that area. But both very, very minor and both acute. Something we don't think will come up again once he recovers from this issue.
So when you say 1 week, he'll miss this week?
No, sorry. Yeah, he's missed his week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did he pull up from
where? Really well. So that was it was quite instructive for all of us, but Paddy in particular, I think, because he has been carrying some things for quite a period of time, and sometimes it's not until you take a week off, recover that little bit better, that you realise just how sore you were. So I think we saw that in his performance. And when I say it's instructive for all of us, it's just something that we need to consider. I think it's well known within AFL circles that most players go out with little niggles. It's rare that they feel perfect, but particularly guys with the power and speed of a Dangerfield, when they are feeling fresh and healthy, their performance is that much better. So we always need to balance. Yeah. What's the acute need this week versus where would we like them to be later on in the year? And those things are always a little bit grey and hard to work out. But in retrospect with this one, the week off did him the world of good.
In a perfect world, would you try to give him another week off in the coming weeks before you do hit finals, before you hit that business end of the season?
I think it depends how he's going. His powers of recuperation are amazing. Maybe if he does have an issue, we'll be more likely to ignore his recuperative powers and enforce the week off for him. But it'll just be dependent on how he feels. I'd be very surprised if he's one that we'd be too proactive with, by which I mean give him a week off even though he's feeling good.
Can you place Miss Stanley Gregory in
some team? Is Hawkins playing as well?
Yes. Sorry.
Yeah, so if you had those... Oh, it's unlikely we'd play three ruckmen in one team.
So does that mean Zach's going to be likely to be unlucky this week?
If we choose Reece, then Zach would be unlucky. But it's not out of the realms of possibility that we'll play Zach again and keep Reece on ice for another week.
Is there, a temptation with Gaz, that he's available again for selection, to give him this week off and essentially a sort of 3 week in break in the middle of the season to freshen him up for back half of the Euros. He's just been, you know, too good a form and wants to get back and play Friday night.
I think it's less about those things and more about his health and injury status. If he did have issues that he was managing, that'd be a likely scenario. But he's just not in that. He's not in that state. He's feeling really good. Some of the issues that have plagued him a little bit over previous seasons, not just his time with us, but his last two seasons at the Gold Coast, look to be in the past. So yeah, there's no reason not to play him this week.
Yeah. Did it become clear to you on Saturday?
Yes, yeah, and we were always of the view that we'd notice it when he didn't play, but still thought that the group functioned okay. I mean, it wasn't the prettiest game of all time, and in part that's a credit to the way the Swans played and pressured, but yeah, there's no doubt that his ball use is rare in the competition. I'm not a big advocate of trying to kid yourself of saying, oh, well, one player goes out and the next one comes in and he'll just be able to do the job. In some respects, they will be, but we can't bring in Ablett's skill overnight.
And Radicalea, you would have been obviously pleased with his comeback, so you pulled up
okay. Yeah, it was a good result given the path that we went down. And I've been at pains to say that Asava not playing for a couple of weeks had virtually nothing to do with form and was more about the management of his load and his injury status over the long term, even his development as a footballer. And so it's always nice when you put a plan like that in place and the player comes back and performs, which he did. But again, we shouldn't be getting ahead of ourselves. We'll always prioritise players in that phase of their career over the long term as opposed to pushing them back in and you know, potentially running them into the ground.
What have you made of the Tigers' form this year? It seems as though it's a little bit different in the past or to the past this year. The best and the worst, the gap seems to be bigger than what it has been.
Maybe, but I think it highlights a couple of things. One, they don't play at Marvel very often, and their two probably worst performances for the year were against the Bulldogs, roughly 40 points, and then on the weekend against North. So that's not the case this week. They're back at the MCG. And the second thing is I think it highlights how finely tuned the competition is. And if you take out some key players in any team, you're going to come back to the field relatively quickly unless you get everything right. And I know there's been some commentary, which I agree with, that Richmond and Collingwood play a system where they can cover for some of their key players. And I think that is right to an extent. But at some point, you know, those gaps are going to be difficult to cover, which is potentially what we've seen a little bit this year. But they've been the best team over the last 3 years, in my view. So there's no risk of us underestimating them. And in a lot of ways, what they did last week's not really that relevant when you compare it to what they'll probably do this week. And we suspect they'll play a lot better, make it really hard for us.
Chris, it's not selling in your short-term plans?
No, so as I said earlier, with the hamstring guys, if I can call them that, Narkel and Scott Selwood, they've both suffered recurrences. So the general philosophy post the recurrence is to be very, very cautious in their return to play. And he missed, it wasn't just the recurrence, but he missed a fair bit of football. So the priority for us at the moment is to get a certain volume of football in at a lower level before we subject him to the rigours of AFL football. So it depends how you define short term. He won't play this week and then we've got the bye. After that, we'll start thinking more seriously about how we get him in. But yeah, we're looking forward to seeing him play some AFL football soon, but we're confident that this is a really thorough a program for Scott. And I mean, I should have mentioned a couple of other guys as well. I mean, Jed Buse and Lockie Fogarty. You know, there's clearly a case to have them in our best 22, even if we don't have any injuries. But we're choosing to be really thorough with their return to play. Lockie Fogarty missed virtually all of the pre-season and Jed Buse missed a fair portion as well. So we think it's a much better mistake to make at this stage of the season to keep them in the VFL too long, as opposed to that big mistake, which would be rushing them back.
You mentioned goal scoring accuracy is pretty important in a couple of results. It was good again on the weekend. Have you prioritised as a club this year, or is it just rolling on as
normal? I find it hard to go back and compare, but we've always thought it was a priority, but it's chicken or the egg, I think. We're getting good outcomes now, so we can look back and say, oh, let's pat ourselves on the back because the program's working really well. There are plenty of examples where I'm confident that the people charged with that responsibility are running a really good program. They're just not getting particularly good outcomes. And then you throw in other variables. Gary Rowan coming in has helped us. He's a deadeye. He's got a beautiful technique, and no one at Geelong's taking credit for that. And I will say that the previous couple of weeks, the Bulldogs and the North Melbourne game, in particular, I think it was goal-kicking as much as anything that got us over the line in those games. I didn't really sense it that much on the weekend. I don't think that was the issue that it was the previous weeks. I thought there are other factors that were more important.
In such a close competition at the moment this season, just how important is it to have that two-game gap at the top of the ladder heading towards the line?
It's really important given our tough start to the draw, our tough draw at the start of the season. So we certainly didn't anticipate, as much as we need to forecast a little bit, this wasn't in our forecast being in this position. So that's a bit of a relief. Yeah, but that's all it is. It's temporary relief. As I said, we play what I consider the best team of the last 3 years on the weekend, and then trying to forecast what the tough games are going to be in the run home is difficult as well. I could point to the form line for a lot of teams over the last 6 weeks and mount a pretty compelling case that it's made fools of us all in terms of our forecasting. So it'll help us with a little bit of flexibility around the things we want to do. But it also has the potential that it might bring in a bit of complacency, because if we slip for a little bit, that gap can be snuffed out in a couple of weeks. So we're to an extent, we're on edge. And in part, that's because we feel that we're still evolving pretty quickly. We're still, play 9 or 10 players under 50 games, the majority of them under 20 games. The team we are in 8 or 10 weeks' time will be very different to the one we are now, even if we don't change personnel. So we're far from sitting back thinking, well, we've just got to keep rolling along and everything will be fine.
You're aware of that complacency potentially seeping in. How do you ward against that happening?
Keep working on our game and highlighting the areas in which we can improve. But I think our players are pretty grounded and pretty aware. There's a sense in our group, rather than complacency, there's a sense that there's so much that we need to work on, and the ladder position doesn't really reflect our position within the competition. And it's pretty easy to go back over the last 3 weeks against teams that are outside of the eight and highlight what a struggle, it was 4 weeks really, what a struggle parts of those games have been. We were 2 points up at three-quarter time against the Gold Coast. It'd be just so naive for our players or our coaches to be thinking we're so much better than the next best team. There's just so much evidence to the contrary.
Do you have a chat to Tom Hortons? Obviously, sort of known he's going to be a little bit careful on how close he sort of gets to going over the line with some of these incidents he's been involved with.
Yeah, we talk about it. There's no doubt about that. We're not kidding ourselves that that's not something that needs to be discussed. But again, hopefully it's not a condescending conversation between prickly old coach and, gun full forward. We work through it. And most of it's sort of the reasons why those sort of things happen and trying to understand what you can do and what you've got to be really careful of. And Tom had an issue in previous years where, almost out of habit, he'd grab players by the jumper and that would lead to something that looked like a jumper punch. He's got that out of his game. This is something that he just needs to be aware of. Again, it was far from intentional. Again, a bit similar to the Gary Ablett situation. Can't really explain, at least in a compelling nature, what he was trying to do, but can explain very clearly what he's not going to do next time.
Chris, as one of the more senior coaches in the competition, did you reach out to a Brendan Bolton with a message or a phone call just to check in?
No, but that doesn't mean that I'm not thinking of him. I tend to think in these situations, what would I want? Leave me alone. I'll wallow by myself. I don't need other coaches reaching out, but I don't know him very well, but I do have great empathy and sympathy for him.
Matthew Knights is a name that's sort of been thrown into the coaching room. You know him pretty well. He's worked under you. Could you see him potentially taking that step to be a head coach again?
So there are two ways to answer this. One, from the view that I don't want to lose him, so I think he should just keep doing what he's doing. But the second one, and the serious one, is that I think he'd be an outstanding head coach. And I'll echo the sentiments of my coach, Lee Matthews, when, at least from his perspective, he was always of the view that he would be a better coach second time around. And I think at Brisbane that proved to be the case. But I think, I'm not going to speak for Matthew. And the most relevant question for him would be, does he want to do it? And I think more and more coaches are thinking that that's not the obvious answer that it once was. They need to think long and hard, especially second time round, whether it's the right thing for you and your family, because it's not easy.
What have you seen in him that suggests to you that he would be a better coach the second time round?
It's hard for me to compare because I didn't see him from the inside at Essendon. But I just think it's the way Lee's mind works to an extent. It's just logical. He's had a bit of practice the first time, took some learnings from it, evolved his coaching style at a different club, seen some different things and would go about it differently. I think, isn't that the evolution that most people go through? I mean, I don't think there's anyone that's being honest with themselves that doesn't say, if I could go back and do things again, I'd do them slightly differently and hopefully better. I'd love to start my playing career again. I'd be a much better player second time around.